Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show tonight. It's Thursday, almost to the end of the week here. It's the day after tax day, the day after the Tea Party's day. And a lot of interesting after effects going on. We're going to get into that in a little bit. Before we get started, of course, always welcome to join us here on the show. The phone number is 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room, his hand poised over that telephone, ready to swoop down and grab that as soon as it rings here. Now, we're going to start out, as we always do, a quick notice for the Dow Industrial Averages. It's kind of all over the place today. It ended up plus 96, and a lot of people are saying, how and why? Because for those of us living in the real world, those of us who don't have the cost of a ticket to that giant open-air casino called Wall Street, the news out here continues to be very bad. Jobless claims by the government's own figures are now topping 6 million. We know that that figure is actually low because we have people who are working jobs that pay less than what they used to have. We have full-time people working part-time. We have people who have simply run out of benefits. They're not counted on these figures anymore. We have people who have simply given up trying to find a new job. Okay, so this number is still low, but it's still a very impressive, scary, terrifying number indeed. Housing starts have plummeted. Brand new homes are not being built because of the glut of foreclosed homes coming onto the market right now. What is really interesting is that just one day after President Barack Obama defended the multi-trillion dollar bailout of the banks and promised he was going to shovel more of your money into their vaults, the Wall Street Journal is publishing an article basically saying that the banks are ramping up foreclosures. And you heard it in the news break. Foreclosures are up 24% over this time last year. They shot up 44% from February to March. So the trend is definitely, definitely accelerating. Some local jurisdictions are trying to basically do something about it. We're getting a story out of Illinois that claiming there is a huge and unserviceable backlog of cases of foreclosure. The Illinois court is basically saying they're not accepting any new ones until September. That's how backed up they are right now. It is a complete, complete, complete logjam. Also, on the tail end of Barack Obama promising he's going to shovel more of our taxpayer money into the banks, lending by these banks that are getting the taxpayer money is falling. Remember back in September, we were told that we had to just be willing to bite the tax bullet, to shovel money at the banks so that they could turn around and start lending to us. In fact, we made a joke around it, about it around here. We used to say, what's a bailout? Bailout is taking $1 trillion from the American people to give to the banks so the banks can turn around and loan it back to the American people at interest. And a lot of people said, yeah, that's exactly what it was. Now we're finding out basically the banks, they're sitting on the money. They're worried about future liquidity. They're worried about a continuing downturn. So they're taking the taxpayer money, and instead of lending it back to try and get the credit markets going again, they're sitting on it. A big part of it, of course, is that, you know, Americans are reluctant to go further into debt. They don't know how they're going to pay it off because the government helped corporations ship all of our jobs overseas. It is a complete mess. It is a complete mess. And they're basically gaming the system for their own benefit. And how we know that is when, now this is happening over in Great Britain. I expect that we'll probably see it here in the United States. When the government over there bailed out the Royal Bank of Scotland and Lloyd's Banking Group, there was a proviso in there that these banks could not pay bonuses to their executives, such as we were already seeing here in the United States. And the banks agreed, and they said, okay, the bonuses are deferred until after we get out of trouble and we pay the money back or whatever. The banks have now made an arrangement to lend the staff the value of their deferred bonuses. In other words, it's a paperwork shuffle. These people are getting their money. They're getting it anyway, despite all the rules and all the agreements and everything. It's just thumbing their noses at the taxpayers who are paying for this thing. And if you really think about it, if you really look about it, look at the situation closely, Geithner and Summers, everything they're doing is not geared to relieving the economic stress on the American people. Everything they're doing is geared to reinflating the debt bubbles. That's why instead of giving the money to we the people to pay our mortgages and our credit cards and everything, they're giving it to the banks to loan to the American people. The idea is to sink those debt hooks into us further and further and further, and they're using our money to do it. Completely, completely screwed up system. Okay, we have a caller waiting on the line, and we're going to go to Rick in Kansas. Aloha, Rick. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Thank you. I was wanting to talk about state sovereignty. I had you touch on it last time I talked to you about Texas and how they're passing sovereignty laws. And
well, they're talking
Kansas
secession now.
Kansas did that back in the 60s, or I mean 70s or 80s, and nothing ever came of it. And I think it's mainly a publicity stunt, you know, because like down in California, they have marijuana laws where, you know, it's illegal to smoke it, at least medically, I know for a fact. But the federal government, they just go down there and arrest people on federal laws, you know, and the only way that, you know, a state can really have sovereignty is if they have a local militia and or, you know, have state police and the populace and stuff like that arrest these federal agents that go down there and try to arrest people for stuff that's legal in their state.
That is precisely why we have a Second Amendment. They talk about the security of a free state, not the nation, but a free state. It was recognized that the biggest threat to the security of the individual 13 states was the growing federal government, and that's why the Second Amendment is in there, and why it talks about military arms, and why it talks about the security of a free state, because it was up to the states to be able to secure their own borders against unreasonable intrusion. In fact, that's what the National Guard is supposed to be. The National Guard is supposed to be the army of the state, answerable to the governor. Unfortunately, over the last several, actually a couple of decades now, going back all the way to the Rodney King riots, the federal government has been passing all these laws, arrogating to themselves the ability to basically commandeer the state's armies, place them under federal control, and in effect use the state's army against the interests of the states. Now, as far as the sovereignty movement is concerned, it is symbolic only to the degree where the state citizens are willing to say, I'm just not going to get involved here. But the reality is that if three-quarters of the states pass this resolution saying the federal government must abide by the limits of the Constitution and the Tenth Amendment, it automatically becomes U.S. law under the Constitution. A couple of years ago, back in the
Already U.S. law under the Constitution?
It is an amendment under the Constitution, but this would basically be a renewed law holding the U.S. government to that limit. Now, the U.S. government's probably going to ignore it, but what you need to do is go back and look at the run-up to the Civil War. It wasn't just a case of all of a sudden the Confederacy decided to break away and there was the battle that, you know, that started it all and the war was on. In the years leading up to the beginning of hostilities, the Confederate states were passing motions just like this one, you know, complaining that the federal government was exceeding its lawful authority underneath the Constitution, and that was what ultimately led to secession. And the idea being that if the federal government was not going to abide by the Constitution, that effectively it was an illegal government anyway, and we're going to break off and just form our own government that serves our interests best. And if Lincoln had not had the issue of slavery to use to motivate the Northern armies, the Confederacy probably would have succeeded in breaking away, because nobody was going to go marching into the South to reimpose federal government rule over the states, when even many people in the Union states were saying the government was already overstepping its bounds. So this is, you know, yes, we know the federal government is not going to abide by any of these resolutions, even if three-quarters of the states pass them. But this is part of that paperwork trail where you begin to realize that the United States is looking at possibly breaking up. And you had the governor of Texas talking about secession. Now, he's backtracked. He's backtracked, and he said, well, there's really no reason to break up the union. But look how many states already have secession movements in them. There's two separate ones in Texas. There's at least one up in Alaska, a couple of them in California, three of them here in Hawaii. We got to stop here. Thank you very much for the call, Rick. We got to let you go here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. We're going to go right back to the phones. We've got Sam calling from the Netherlands. Aloha, Sam. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind this evening?
Hi, it's Sam. I called before, but then I was Sam from Sweden. I'm a pilot, but now I'm home back in the Netherlands. Three things. One, I had an interesting discussion with a Muslim fellow this afternoon. I figured, you know, I'm going to try out the interesting on him. And after a while, we actually both concluded that most of the misunderstanding over here between Muslims and non-Muslims can be traced back to not understanding each other's financial systems. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing which was interesting. Then the other, I have two more things, but I'll be brief and quick. The second thing was the bailout money. I think it's just being totally used to cover all the derivative debts, which is why, you know, it's not flowing back into the economy. I think you're totally right on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third issue, which I wanted to talk to you briefly about, was I listened to Alex Jones the other day, and he was talking about Mexico and how corrupt it was and how he's never, ever going back to Mexico. Well, my brother used to live in Hawaii for the longest while, on Oahu. And for the last couple of years, especially since I changed girlfriends, we've been going there quite often. In 2006, I think we went there six times in total, which is a, you know, awful stretch from Europe. Sometimes we even went through Japan, sometimes through the States. But to make a long story short, the hassle at the border, you know, the last few times we showed up, the U.S. border, it's like modern Nazi Germany, how it would look like in probably 2009. You know, that's where you arrive. And it's like you enter a prison because, you know, they take a mugshot and they fingerprint you. So, you know, Alex was talking like that about Mexico. I'm thinking, dude, you know, I used to come to Hawaii all this time, and last year I've noticed we didn't go. So, and it's because of that, I'll be quite honest and blunt, because I obviously love it there, and I know why you live there, and I know why you like it there, but, man, tourists are staying away.
You're absolutely correct. The tourists are staying away. Our tourism levels are, the state says, it's crisis point. We are a state that is very dependent on tourism. We've never succeeded in getting our high-tech sector being a sizable portion of our income. Our agriculture has been in decline because of all the condo building and everything, and we're going through the same problems as anybody else in the mainland. But, yeah, our tourism is just taking it in the teeth because of the Transportation Safety Administration. We had a tragic story at the Honolulu Airport last year. A family coming up from American Samoa, they were flying to Honolulu because their small child needed emergency surgery at the Honolulu Hospital that couldn't be done in Samoa. And TSA, because they didn't have anybody who could speak Samoan and the Samoan family couldn't speak English, they kept him at the airport for hours waiting for a translator to show up, and the baby died.
Oh, that's terrible.
I mean, that's how bad it has gotten here. And as far as Mexico is concerned, now, I will admit I have not been there in a while, but when I lived in Southern California, I went down there a lot. I've been to the archaeological sites. I've been to quite a few of the resorts. I never had a problem down there, you know. And
no, you got to ask yourself the question, Mike. If you got to, you know, get fingerprinted and a mugshot taken to enter a place, I mean, apart from, you know, entering the U.S., the other place I remember where they do this is if you enter prison.
Yeah, that's exactly,
you know,
right.
And they book you.
Well, I remember, like, the last couple of times I've gone up to Canada, and I'll go through border control into Canada, and it's, hi, how are you? You know,
exactly.
Glad to see you. Welcome to Canada. And they'll give you brochures where to find things. And great, and you do your business. And then I'm coming back into the United States. I'm coming back into my own country. And, like, I'm up against the wall, and they're fondling me, and they're saying, what are you doing? What are you up to? What are you thinking? And just like, you know, who needs this? You know, there are times when I say I should have stayed in Canada, you know, but it is. It is completely out of control. And it's designed to keep us afraid and isolated and convince us somehow that the government is taking care of us, even as it's destroying the country out from underneath of us all.
You know, one thing, though, and that's the last I want to interject on this, it wasn't always like this. I mean, I remember 5-6 years ago not even being like that. You know, you'd arrive at customs in Hawaii, they would greet you the same way, you know, the Canadians greeted you last time you visited. It has really changed in the last, I would say, 4 to 5 years. It's when it's really gotten this bad and totally ridiculous. And the last thing, oh, the Honolulu airport is terrible. I've gone through that airport at least 20, you know, and odd times in the last few years. And I think 50% of the time, you know, my bag was missing stuff. I arrive home, and there's this nice paper that says, Homeland Security, we have been in your bag. And then, you know, I see that there's crap missing. I'm like, yeah, okay, so you didn't mention on the note that you're taking stuff, you know, but it seems to have happened on the Honolulu airport each time.
Oh, yeah, no, they, Homeland Security, TSA, some of them, you know, got caught burglarizing people's luggage. Unfortunately, because of the way the laws are written and the very tight union, couldn't even be fired. They were reassigned. They were to someplace where they're not dealing with the luggage anymore. But, you know, they're absolutely considered themselves above the law when they destroyed my laptop, which was not Honolulu. That was at Seattle. But when they destroyed my laptop, I mean, their attitude is, well, we're sorry, but it's necessary for national security and you can't do anything about it anyway. And I filed some paper report that they gave me. And as far as I know, it went into the shredder because I never heard anything else about it. But that was basically their attitude. You know, the guy just...
Were we ever reimbursed?
Oh, heck no. Heck no. The guy just took out the laptop and he's flipping it around looking and he physically drops it on the ground.
Oh,
and
man.
That was the end of that machine. And that was it. And not even an apology, you know.
No,
so whatever terroristic materials has been blocked from coming into the country. But it's absurd and it's wrecking our tourism. And, you know, the point I made in this letter that the Star Bulletin did actually publish finally is that
amazing,
if the U.S.
Yeah.
government is going to drop $100,000 in debt on every one of us taxpayers, the very least they can do is get the heck out of the way and let us at least have a chance to earn that. But we're caught in this double bind where they're piling debts onto us and they're taking our jobs and livelihood away at the same time. What do they expect us to do except reach the point where we're going to riot and start shooting? Maybe that's what they want, you know, because then they're justified shooting back and that whole situation. But it is. We're caught between the rock and the hard place. They take our high-paying jobs away, and they throw debts on top of us, and then they wonder why we're angry right now.
Well, one difference between the bailouts so far in Europe and the U.S. has been that public debt, you know, which has been, you know, as you said, stockpiled over there. And over here, governments seem to be weary of that, and they don't want that, which is something Obama didn't really get out of him at the G20 meeting. But you know all that.
Yeah.
It's a good show, my friend. I love it. Listen to you every day. And today I was listening live because I was awake still, and I figured I'm going to call in.
Well, thank you very much for the call, and please call in again.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
All right. That was Sam from the Netherlands, pilot flying all over the place. I remember there was a time in my life when I thought, I'd have fun as a commercial airline pilot, and that would have been a cool thing to do. But coulda, shoulda, woulda. I'm too late to have too old to have a career change now anyway. Otherwise, I'd go back to wanting to be a cowboy. All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll be going to come back. We're going to talk about the aftermath of the Tea Party and the very obvious fear and panic reaction we are seeing from the U.S. government as a result and its potential international ramifications. 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We will be right back.
GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And we've got a caller waiting on the line, but before I go to him, I kind of wanted to follow up on yesterday's tea parties. I am still still getting videos and photographs and reports from all over the country from people who were at the tea parties. And I know the corporate media is estimating maybe 250,000 people total all across the country. I think it had to be far more than that. I mean, certainly the crowd that we had here in Honolulu, it was surprising. I thought there'd be a good turnout. It was huge. It was just huge. And I shot a bunch of pictures. Actually, my wife shot a bunch of still pictures, which are up on the whatreallyhappened.com website right now. I shot a little video, not as much as I wanted to. I was kind of surprised. I was not prepared for this at all. I didn't dress up or anything. And I found myself being recognized in the crowd where people were coming up and they wanted their pictures taken with me and all kinds of things like that. And ultimately, I got drafted to actually speak a few words myself to the assembled group, which I did, and that was kind of a nice delight. So I didn't get as much video as I wanted to, but I'm going to put that up on the Honolulu Tea Party page. But the point is, the reaction that we're seeing today, first of all, I'm still seeing just these incredible efforts to try and portray resistance to excessive taxation as a partisan issue. Oh, it's just the Republicans trying to undermine Barack Obama. And amazingly enough, somebody came out today saying that it's actually a liberal trick to make the GOP look bad. They can't even get their stories straight here. It's all divide and conquer stuff. Representative Jen Schakowsky, Democrat, Illinois, basically came out saying that the Tea Parties were despicable and shameful. I'm sorry, what part of the First Amendment is it you're having a problem with? And did we not, in fact, begin the process of creating an independent nation free from Great Britain over resistance to excessive taxation without representation? What part of that do you have a problem with? What part of our war for independence do you find despicable and shameful, Representative Schakowsky? What part of the Declaration of Independence are you ashamed of, Representative Schakowsky? The phone lines are open. Representative, 800-259-9231. Feel free to call in and tell me just what part about the Declaration of Independence you think is so bad. It is obvious from the panic out there that we the people, and by that I mean all the people, the Republicans and the Democrats and the Libertarians and the Ron Pauls and the Flying Spaghetti Monster people and the blacks and the whites and the rich and the poor, all of us together, we are taxed too much. And the issue isn't who's going to get more tax cuts. It's that everybody needs a major, major reduction in taxation if we're going to get back on our feet again and get this nation's economy going again. That's what it's about. They're trying so hard to do the divide and conquer and split us apart, and it's not going to work because they've done it so many times. And we all know it now. And there is something about the current United States government. They can't get out of that Cold War mentality from the 1950s and 1960s. They still think that the same gimmicks are going to work again. Which reminds me, if you are an organizer of a demonstration or a protest or anything like that, if you have not already studied it, go on the internet and study the history of COINTELPRO, the FBI's undercover operation to infiltrate, subvert, and destroy anybody critical of the government. Back in the 1960s, they were targeting the pro-peace movement. They were targeting the Native Americans, land right movement. They were targeting the early feminists. They were just basically targeting and trying to destroy anybody who had a point of view that was not in line with U.S. Federal government policy. And when it was finally exposed in the 1970s, the scandal almost delegitimized the government. They're still playing the same games, and you need to know how they play dirty. Once you've gone through it, you'll recognize a lot of it. It goes on all the time. And they're still playing the same games. And they're trying to do it now. Meanwhile, I notice that the day after the tea parties, Barack Obama flies off on Air Force One down to Mexico to try and manufacture a new national issue for the media to look at. So they don't have to look at the fact that a large chunk of the country just stood up and said, we don't want to pay these taxes anymore. So the big story isn't the American people getting ready to throw out the tax collector and tar and feather the king's representative in town. Oh, no, 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 no. The big story now is guns and drugs down in Mexico way. And, oh, the guns are coming from the United States and guns are bad. guns are so bad, so we got to stop the guns in the United States. You know something? If you close off the border, like you're supposed to be doing, you'd solve the gun smuggling problem and the illegal alien problem all at the same time. But we don't seem to see that happening right now. We're being fondled and groped at the airport, but Osama bin Laden, if he were still alive, could walk across the border into Texas anytime he wanted to. Complete nonsense stuff. But the point is, all of this Mexico stuff that came up today, the drug problem and the gun problem, it's a distraction. They are desperate to pull the media's attention away from the tax protests and the deteriorating economy. That's what this Mexico thing is all about. The corporate media, they've fallen for it. Because, well, it's not even being falling for it. That's their order. You will look at this today. This is the story for the day, which is why people are not paying attention to the corporate media and why they are here on the Genesis Communication Network listening to what is really going on in the world. And they're listening to me and they're listening to Alex Jones and they're going out to the blogs to find out what is really happening. See, the magician's tricks don't work anymore. Obama is there with his little red handkerchief waving it off to this side to get you to look over there while he pulls something sinister and sneaky with his left hand. And it doesn't work. We know where the magic trick is taking place. The big story today should be and is the large number of American people from all walks of life who stood up yesterday and said, we've had it. We've had enough. It's one thing to pay taxes for roads and schools and hospitals. It is quite another to be taxed into poverty, to shower money on Israel so they can kill brown people, and to shower trillions of dollars on the banking system which created the economic mess in the first place. That's not what the government is supposed to do. It's not in the Constitution. This is another case where the federal government is exceeding its lawful authority. And that should be the story. It is the story and will continue to be the story here in the blogosphere. All the corporate media can do by following Barack Obama down to Mexico is just further make itself irrelevant to the American people, because the vast majority of American people aren't all that concerned about Mexico's problems, other than it may be a forecaster of what is about to happen in this country. So if Mexico's got a drug problem, that should be Mexico's problem. If they've got a gun problem, they'll have to deal with it in their way. What's really going on is that Mexico's government is drug corrupted, the same as ours, and what's going on down there is the beginnings of their civil war. And the real concern that Barack Obama and the rest of the boys in Washington, D.C. have is that if we, the American people, realize that what's going on in Mexico is ordinary Mexican people being as fed up with their corrupted government as we are with ours, we might even unite with them across the border and say, let's just clear out the whole mess right now. It's a global revolution. We saw it in Iceland. We're seeing it in Thailand. We're seeing it in all these other countries. Everybody is getting angry at the same time, and they're standing and saying, enough is enough is enough. And governments everywhere, especially ours, as I said before, they're trying to bring back the debt bubbles. They're desperate to try and force things to go back to what was working for them before, where we are constantly in debt and working our guts out to allow them to live lives of exalted, noble status. And we're tired of it. We've had enough of it. We're looking for something different and shoving the same at us and looting us continuously. We're at the end of that. We're not going to go along with that anymore. That's what the whole thing about the Tea Parties yesterday were. And yesterday was just a start. Yesterday was just a start. I know everybody in Washington, D.C. is hoping and praying. We've had our little expression of anger. We've had our little, you know, our little snit. And now we'll tuck tail between our legs and bow our heads and go back to our factories and our fields like good little serfs, and they won't have to deal with us again. I don't think so. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors, and we'll be taking the phone call from John in Texas.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
When all this twist is steel, what's swept away? Did these remaining holes reveal what's really happening?
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're going to go right to the phones. John in Texas. John, sorry it took so long to get to you. I just had some stuff to get off my chest. What is on your mind today?
Yeah, I'm just concerned about the states passing those the new laws on trying to, I guess, separate from the United States. Or is it separation? I'm not sure.
Well, no, what they're trying to do is to go basically force the federal government to return to the limits of the Constitution that it originally was confined by. When the United States was first set up, the Founding Fathers gave all the power to the individual separate states to run their own lives, and the federal government's role was limited to basically arbitrating across the borders, national defense in time of war only, and there were strict limits on what the government could and could not do relative to what was going on inside the states. And over the last couple of hundred years, the federal government tends to grow and grow and grow, and it very clearly intrudes into areas of state law where it really has no business. So the states are starting to pass these resolutions to try and remind the federal government that it has, in fact, exceeded its constitutional authority.
I got you. Just one quick question. Wasn't this also tried in Argentina when they had their crisis of 2001, possibly? Does anybody know that out there?
Well, I think if you go back and you study the history of any nation that is sort of heading toward a crisis, that you will find people within the various regional governments, they're trying to find a legal remedy to try and fix the situation. Nobody really wants war and open conflict. They're trying to find working within the system. And what these resolutions are, whether it's in Argentina or the United States or wherever they're tried, it is a gentle reminder that we're supposed to be a nation of laws and that the federal government has to abide the laws as much as anybody else. I mean, obviously, we're seeing every day that that's not the case. Barack Obama's refusing to prosecute the people who did the torture and everything. They clearly hold themselves above the law. But where this is an issue, as I was telling the other caller, under the Constitution, if three-quarters of the states pass this resolution saying you've got to obey the 10th Amendment, then under the Constitution, the federal government is obligated to honor this and recognize, yes, we must obey this law and Constitution. They won't do it, or we wouldn't be in this mess anyway. But it sets the stage for a conflict between the states, and hopefully it won't break out into a civil war. But very clearly, we're hearing talk about secession, and we're hearing about just basically breaking away and saying, okay, Washington, D.C. can be its own little country, and they can do whatever lunacy they want to do. But the rest of the nation, we want to go back to what we had, you know, back in the first 120 years of this country when things really were working good for us, for we the people.
Right. I mean, I understand. I think it's a really good idea that you explained it to me. I'm just really concerned. I think we need to do that. I just think when we push back against the government, they're going to be forced to make a decision. And inevitably, if I look back, I've just been studying Argentina so much in the last month in college. And mm-hmm. I'm at business school and how it all happened. I'm just really concerned at pushing them in this way. They're going to push back in another way, and we're going to be forced in civil war in the end. And that really concerns me, actually.
Okay, well, if you want a little more relaxation, study the Romanian Revolution, because that was over and done within 2 weeks' time. And then look at the fall of the USSR. There was hardly any bloodshed at all. The government just collapsed from its own rot, corruption, and dishonesty and vanished. And there was a period of confusion, and then they started the Russian republics. And once they kicked out the oligarchs, you know, things really kind of lit up over there. So, you know, time will solve that mystery, as they say. And, you know, I don't like violence. I'm not encouraging violence. In fact, right now, the only people encouraging violence, I think, are all working for the FBI. But it may come. What we do is, you know, just the best that we can do. We can't go on the way we are now, and the government doesn't want to go back to what we had before. You know, it's as John Kennedy used to say, when peaceful revolution becomes impossible, violent revolution becomes inevitable. I don't like it, but I think we're stuck there.
That's true. Thank you for your show. I really appreciate it, and thank you very much. Bye.
You got it. Thanks a lot for the call, John. Call in again. Okay, speaking of Barack Obama, just kind of walking around, not obeying the laws, and being very, very weird here. Georgetown University is reporting that they covered over the monogram IHS, which is supposed to symbolize the name of Jesus Christ, on the podium, on the stage, where President Obama spoke at the university on Tuesday, where he made his big economic speech to try and head off the Tea Parties, which failed. And apparently the White House had asked Georgetown to cover up all signs of the name of Jesus or any religious symbolisms there. And this struck a lot of people as weird because Barack Obama just hosted a Seder at the White House. And he is not Jewish, to the best of our knowledge. But when he goes to a Catholic university, and supposedly he is a Christian, and then they say, we got to cover up all the symbols. And I'm not saying whether one is right and the other is wrong, but there seems to be an inconsistency here. And I think it speaks to this idea of, is Barack Obama master in his own White House? Because it doesn't seem like it. It really doesn't seem like it. I think under the separation of church and state, it would be appropriate to not have religious symbols during his speech. But at the same time, to go the other way with a Seder in the White House, which gets a lot of press, something's wrong there. Something is not making sense. There's a disconnect there. Now, speaking of further disconnect, the other day we ran a story about how the L.A. County school system is being forced to lay off 4,500 teachers and support staff because of the economy. And yet we are hearing, amazingly enough, there is a program that is underway in the Los Angeles County school system funded by taxpayer dollars. Its name is Spirituality for Kids, and what they're teaching is the Kabbalah in the classroom. Now, I'm old-fashioned. What I want in our schools is, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic, actually science and engineering, because those are the things that are going to build our new technologies and our new industries. Instead, they are teaching a religious study in the public school. Now, the defenders of the program are saying that they're actually teaching ethics. And, again, there seems to be a double standard here. You know, our schools should be preparing our kids to have a financial future in this country, not indoctrination for various political and religious agendas, especially at a time when we're having to let teachers go. Why is this program still there? Again, there's a double standard at work. It is very, very alarming. And finally, the last story that we're going to cover today, because we're out of time here. Barack Obama has released the memos by which the Bush Department of Justice claimed to authorize or find legal justification for the use of torture on captured prisoners in Iraq. And there has been a little bit of redacting, not a huge amount, but some of the elements are redacted. There's still some stuff that's not being released. But the important thing here is they are admitting to some additional practices. Remember when everyone was talking about waterboarding, and then they were talking about destroying videotapes and all this other stuff, and I said, you know, there is other stuff going on besides waterboarding, and it may even be worse. Well, apparently two of the things they are admitting actually took place, what they're calling walling, as in the wall of your office. And what it is simply that the torturers were allowed to repeatedly slam prisoners' heads into walls. Now, this is something that can and usually does produce permanent neurological damage, because when you slam somebody's head into the wall, the brain, which is floating inside the skull, slams into the skull on that side, and the brain starts to bruise. It can swell. Can actually lead to death if you do it enough, without even cracking the skull. If you do it enough and you get the brain to start swelling, it's all over. And it is a very, very painful way to die. The other thing they're admitting to doing is locking prisoners into these boxes filled with live insects. You think about that one just before you try and go to sleep tonight. This is the image of the United States of America in the 21st century. Waterboarding people, simulated drowning, with American doctors and their medical instruments to make sure that it's not going too far, but to say, yeah, you can go a little bit further, give them another jolt, you know. And, you know, locked in a box with live insects, getting your head smashed against the wall. This is how the rest of the world is going to see the United States of America. And for this, if for no other reason, we should say, enough. I don't want to pay for this. My taxes are paying for this, and I've had enough. What's that line from Network? I'm mad as heck, and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's it for our show today. We're going to head on out of here, and again, tune in tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network for Pow Hana Friday. So until tomorrow, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, more and more road rage out there all the time, got to be really, really careful, and aloha, America.